episode 354 of the YLP podcast. Ladies and gentlemen of the YLP universe, AEW Revolution, as we always say here on the YLP podcast, has come and gone. And it is finally time to discuss exactly what went down this past Sunday with, of course, our AEW Revolution review. And I'm going to tell y'all the reasons why, at least in my humble opinion, AEW Revolution decided to go to the Kumite. For those of y'all who know the Boondocks reference, y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. We'll discuss all of that, especially the main event between MJF and Bryan Danielson, the stuff of legend. I would say it was a better show than most thought. And there were a lot of matches that made me think they went to the Kumite on this one. But an episode of the YLP podcast wouldn't be an episode of the YLP podcast without all the news that's fit for me to talk about. And what do we have on this week's docket? Well, let me tell you. WWE, finally, has begun to contact names for the 2023 Hall of Fame, and they plan to keep the ceremony short this go-around. Matthew Wilkinson discusses in his article from Wrestling Inc., and I'm going to give you my thoughts on the entire situation as a whole. Literally, like a couple hours before recording, I actually found out about this news from our wonderful homeboy, Brother Fretz from the Fretzelmania podcast. Shout out to the dude. And we're going to be talking about all that, as well as the Australian government is apparently negotiating with WWE to run a major stadium show. Given the news of pretty much Backlash going to Puerto Rico in May, and of course with the King and Queen of the Ring going to be in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and then you have Money in the Bank being in London this year, I can understand why the international flair is on board. Also, to round out the news of this week, Vincent Kenny McMahon was at Raw, as we know, this past Monday. And we're going to discuss a little bit about Raw, because I want to talk about that John Cena verbal ass-whooping of Austin Theory. Woo! But we're going to discuss, you know, what Vince McMahon actually did at Raw this past Monday night. And I'm going to give you my thoughts as to why I think we are hearing some lies about the whole Vince McMahon was there just to see John Cena. I'm saying cap like a motherfucker, but I'll explain all of that on this week's episode. It is Saturday, and you know exactly what that means. This is episode 354 of the YLP podcast. Let's hit that intro. Let's get it started. And with that being said, let us begin.
Buzz, buzz, this is the HBIC, the K. Murphy of Kings of the Rings podcast, and you are listening to Young Lions Perspective, exclusively here on Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast.
What's going on, guys? Zach from the Wrestling Listeners Podcast here, and welcome to episode 354 of the YLP Podcast. So glad to have you guys here with me on this Saturday, and I hope you're enjoying your day, your night, your afternoon, and your evening, wherever you may be, wherever you are in the world. Thank you guys so much for checking out this episode of the podcast, and as always, I greatly and truly appreciate it. It is Saturday, April. No, I'm kidding. March 11th, 2023. I almost really said April 11th. Anywho, hope you guys are having a great Saturday so far. Hope your week was solid. I am here once again with my guest co-host, Miss Princess. She wanted to be nosy as I was trying to record the opening to this episode beforehand, and she just wanted to be a little nosy, but yeah, you want to be a little nosy, but don't you? Plus, I got a little bit of lunch over here, so like, I'm hoping she doesn't try to get into that, but we ain't gonna worry about that right now. But if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or opinions about today's episode or any of the other 353 episodes of YLB Podcast, do not hesitate to hit your boy up with a voice message over at anchor.fm/unlinedperspective. But be informed. A little bit of housekeeping we have here. Apparently now, anchor.fm, we're going to clap it up here. We are clapping. Apparently, Anchor has teamed up with Spotify, and now they are part of the Spotify for Podcasters, which means we are part of Spotify for Podcasters, which means we are cool now. Well, we are cooler than we already were. This just makes it more solidified reasoning of us being cool. So if you do see a little bit of a difference when you go to anchor.fm to check out all the podcasts that you know and you love from WrestleTic Radio, keep that in mind. But also, if you want to send me an email, you can easily do that with an email on younglionsperspective@gmail.com. I'll give you, of course, the remainder of the particulars, of my social media and everything at the end of today's episode. Hope you guys had a good week, and I hope you're having a great Saturday so far. And before we get into the news, of course, I just want to get into a little bit of what went down on WWE Raw this past Monday night. And in the wonderful proverbial words of one Adrian Broner, for those who may not know who he is a professional boxer. Not a bad career. Everyone dubbed him at one point to be him, possibly be the next Floyd Mayweather, which I thought was supremely cap. But hey, beggars can't be choosers, and I ain't trying to pick names out of a fucking hat. But in the words of one Adrian Broner, Austin Theory got cooked. I thought the promo from Roman Reigns was bad. And in terms of bad, I mean John Cena got in that ass back in 2017. Apparently, no. They let John Cena cook. And I actually did post it on my Twitter page at YL Perspective, if you want to actually follow me over there, capital YLP Perspective. I was just like, yo, don't get me wrong. Theory, like Reigns, held his own as much as he could against John Cena. But when it comes to John Cena, and if they didn't give him that man a script to go off of and just gave him talking points to run with, Austin Theory got cooked. It has been a long time since I've seen a wrestler get cooked in a promo. And honestly, the last time I seen a wrestler get cooked like that was Roman Reigns back in 2017. I'm crazy to imagine that was 6 years ago already. Crazy to imagine it was 6 years ago we saw Roman Reigns get cooked. And now Roman Reigns is the greatest fucking thing since sliced fucking bread. So maybe, and I actually did see this a comment on a tweet. I forget who posted it. That person actually said, well, I mean, Roman Reigns got cooked in 2017 and look how his career is gone. So maybe Austin Theory might get that same rub. And if you really think about it, I think I saw a comment on Twitter as well. What was it? Yeah, John Cena only really like works with people he actually likes. So if anything, John Cena did this with Austin Theory because he actually digs Austin Theory. I mean, John Cena's not really going to, most big names in the company aren't really going to work with guys they don't plan on, they actually don't fuck with. Like this whole Brock Lesnar Omos thing. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but if Brock Lesnar gave it the okay to work with Omos, I can understand why this match would take place. Do I still think it's a Vince McMahon deal? Probably. We ain't talking about that right now. I just had to put that out there. Austin Theory got cooked. And that's not a bad thing. Cena in terms of promos is always going to be on a different level. In terms of that. I mean, from beginning to end. I mean, like I said, Theory held his own for a little bit. But then John Cena just, oh my God. I can't even think, it was so good. I can't even think of what he actually said in the damn promo. That's how good that was. Because it's just so many bits. And it was just, if this were a rap battle, Cena 30'd Austin Theory for all my battle rap fans out there. But we ain't going to talk about much more about that. We're going to get into all the news that's fit for me to talk about. Yes, we're going to talk about the news. We did this last week. I don't understand why you don't understand the format yet. We did this. Yeah, I do the news first, and then we talk about the revolution. Yeah, that's what we do. Okay, that's how we do. I'm not trying to have dead air on here, Miss Nang. Okay, we're gonna have a good show though, right? Yeah. Okay, we're gonna have a good show. All right, so let us get into the news of the week, and we will start off going over to WrestlingInc.com. This news actually just came about a couple hours ago, and as I said in the intro, shout out to my homeboy brother Fretz for actually dropping the news on to us in our Discord group. And yes, we still have a Discord. If you want to go over to Wrestle Addict Radio's Twitter, find our link tree, find the Discord, invite yourself, our esteemed general manager will bring you into the fold, and then you can join us within the Discord. Happy days are here again. Yes, I'm doing shameless plugs. Deal with it. But let us get into the news. WWE has contacted names for 2023 Hall of Fame. Yes. It's Hall of Fame. Plans to keep the ceremony short. This is from Matthew Wilkinson. With 3 weeks to go until WrestleMania weekend, there has been no word about this year's induction class for the WWE Hall of Fame. By now, there has usually been some announcement of those at the center of the honored festivities. WWE still has plans to carry on the annual gala, and according to the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter, has reached out to legendary talent for inclusion. The ceremony will take place directly after SmackDown on March 31st, the night before WrestleMania kicks off. As for how much talent is being offered induction, that remains a mystery. Evolution is a mystery. Anyway, but WWE is operating with the idea of keeping things shorter than in previous years. Earlier this week, Mick Foley revealed that he had been asked to induct someone as part of this year's class, although he wouldn't offer any specifics on who had made the request or if it had even been greenlit yet. One name that keeps getting bandied about is Dave Bautista. He was initially tapped to enter the Hall of Fame as part of the class of 2020. However, that event was put off, of course, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. He was then going to be inducted the following year, but he was pulled from the slate with the wrestler turned actor stating that prior obligations would prevent him from attending. A later date was expected for his eventual participation, so could this be the year? Dwayne The Rock Johnson's name has also been floating around with WrestleMania 39 in Los Angeles for months. The rumblings were that WWE wanted to get The Rock involved with this year's annual event. The popular train of thought was for a main event match with Roman Reigns. However, that has been since proven not to have come to fruition at all, so would his appearance to be a part of the class of 2023 be a worthwhile consolation prize? We'll hopefully find out soon. Now, the only really gripe I have with this news is that usually WWE has already started their announcement of inductees for that particular year's Hall of Fame. Hi. Yeah, Miss Princess is a little bit of a nosy butt when it comes to me doing things that aren't normally going on in my mom's place of residence. Yeah, what? Yes, I'm talking about you. Yeah, I know. You're so excited. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. You go lay down. You go relax. You should go lay down. Take a nap. Relax. You were doing that before, and you were so happy. Anywho, usually around this time, we would have already known at least a few of the names that are going into the Hall of Fame this go-around. But for some reason, it kind of irked me a little bit to find out that, yeah, they really didn't announce anybody. And it kind of didn't really cross my mind until Fretz in our Discord group really brought that up. I was quite shocked and kind of upset because, you know, usually we would have already had an idea of who kind of would be in the Hall of Fame for this year, usually the 4 or 5 names that we would have on hand and all that good stuff. But for some reason, it still kind of makes me feel some type of way about it. I mean, good on them for actually kind of keeping it secret, but I don't know. I really don't know. Hey, get out of there. I'm usually not sure. No, you're not getting my food. You better go on with that. You can go lay down. That's what you need to do. Yes, you're adorable. I know. I like you too. She's a very, very needy baby. No, that's mine. I don't share. You know this. Okay? She's nosy because she wants to get in my pot roast. She wants to get all up in my pot roast and rice. but the serious thing is, the way I see it is that, I mean, granted, yes, good on them for actually making sure we have a Hall of Fame ceremony this year. But I'm kind of surprised at the fact that there really hadn't been any names announced for it. Because usually we already have begun that speculation of, you know, who could we see in this year's Hall of Fame? Is The Rock going to be in? Is Batista going to be in? Is so-and-so going to be in? Who's a is there going to be a celebrity part of it this go around? So usually all the speculation would have been going around. More than likely, often than not, it would have started, honestly, if we were being brutally honest with ourselves and each other, around Elimination Chamber time, in that sense. Around Elimination Chamber, somewhere around there, maybe before that. But the why we didn't get any announcements for that is surprising to me, for the most part. I mean, like I said, good on them for doing so. And the fact that Mick Foley revealed that he had been asked to induct someone, now we can kind of start those little rumor actions and all that stuff, which is then nice, but I don't know. It's just very, very surprising to me that WWE really didn't have anything in terms of basically having at least a name or two out there. You know, we'll see. At the end of the day, though, I mean, yes, granted, I'm glad they're doing a Hall of Fame this year. Just kind of irks me a little bit that they didn't really say much of anything in terms of who will be in there or, you know, maybe, you know, giving us some inkling as to who will be in this year's ceremony. But it bees what it bees. It is what it is. We will hope. I'm sure we'll find out probably beginning this week who will get there, who will be the first inductee, who will be the headliner for this year's WrestleMania weekend, and who will be the headliner for this year's Hall of Fame. I honestly don't have an idea who could be in there, but whoever going to be there will more than likely, hopefully, have earned their spot, and we will see. And, of course, if anything pops up for this week, I will give you all that news next week on episode 355. But we will move on with the news. And this little bit of news actually kind of surprised me a little bit, but it makes all the sense in the world in terms of the international flair of shows that we're going to be getting as we head into, I would say, the late spring into the summer months. Good times here in terms of WWE premium live events. And we head over to Fightful.com with a report, Australian government negotiating with WWE to run major stadium show. This is actually from Skylar Russell. A new report is suggesting that WWE could return to Australia for a major event. In the latest edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer, noted that the state government of Western Australia is currently negotiating with WWE to run a major stadium show in the country. The report notes that the deal could be similar to the deal that WWE made with Melbourne back in 2018. Meltzer also states that the event will likely be held in Perth, which has hosted the UFC 284 event back in February. That event was held in the RAC Arena, which has capacity of 15,000 people. WWE has not visited the country of Australia since 2019. I believe that was Super Showdown. As previously noted, WWE has hosted the Super Showdown event in Melbourne, Australia, back on October 6, 2018. That event was held at the Melbourne Cricket Ground and had an announced attendance of 70,309 people. After WrestleMania 39, WWE will host three straight premium live events in international countries, beginning with Backlash on May 6th. That's going to take place in San Juan, Puerto Rico, which is actually the day after Mr. Wild P. Jr.'s birthday. So I think that'll be a nice present for him and I to enjoy that. WWE King of the Ring on March 27th, taking place in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia to kick off Memorial Day weekend. And Money in the Bank on July 1st, that will take place in London, England. I actually dig this. I dig that, you know, WWE is starting to kind of warm up to the idea of having more international shows. I know usually WWE once or twice a year goes over to Europe and has a little bit of a European tour, maybe do a Raw and a SmackDown somewhere in a one of the major stops on the road on the tour there. But usually the international flair doesn't get the international fans don't get as much. They don't get as much show here in terms of WWE. So for WWE, especially now in the Triple H regime, to actually want to basically have, you know, shows outside of the United States, especially with Clash at the Castle at Cardiff. And Clash of the Castle in Cardiff. I think it's a fantastic thing. I think it's a great thing to see that country, you know, we're going to get a show in Puerto Rico. We're going to get a show in London. I usually don't care too much for the Saudi Arabia events because of things that have happened prior to. Yes. Princess is very excited for the Puerto Rico show for some reason. The second I said Puerto Rico, she's been wagging her tail at the moment. But, yeah, the fact that they're doing it in Puerto Rico, and I think if I remember a tweet, it's going to be the first time since like the mid-2000s that they have actually done a show in Puerto Rico. So that's going to be very exciting for the fans out there in San Juan. I'm sure there are going to be plenty of people going to go clamoring to go over that. I'm sure NYC Demon Diva is going to be all over that 100%. And I'm sure other people will probably make the trip down to Puerto Rico and enjoy that wonderful event with Backlash. That is going to be wild. In terms of the Australian side of things, it is going to be a good time. I mean, don't get me wrong. Super Showdown wasn't that bad of a show. I believe the Iconics competed at that event. Buddy Murphy, well, now Buddy Matthews, competed in that event. And it wasn't too bad of a show. I'm not going to front with y'all. And so it's really cool to see, you know, Australia now trying to get into the mix for having shows. Like I said, London for bless you. London for in the UK is bless you. London in United Kingdom is going to be doing a show. I'm quite excited for that. So with this, I think, you know, with WWE wanting to branch out and go to other countries, maybe it's technically scouting for NXT everywhere. I'm not sure yet. I mean, especially with NXT Europe. NXT Japan, NXT Australia. They just want NXT around the goddamn world. But this is always a good thing. It's very refreshing to see that WWE wants to take their product more around the world, especially for big shows where fans usually don't see pay-per-views, especially the UK squadron. And I know my homie, Brother Jermaine, you know, I hope you're going to Money in the Bank. If you're not, I'm going to be very upset with you. I'm kidding. I'm not. But if you are going to Money in the Bank, I hope you enjoy yourself. I don't know. But like I said, I got my UK squadron out there, my boy, Brother Jermaine. but yeah, I mean, the international flair is everything. And it creates a different dynamic for fans like myself who aren't going to be going to that, more likely aren't going to be going to that show. But for the fans of Puerto Rico, London, and of course, Saudi Arabia. It's a wonderful thing to see that, you know, those fans are going to get an opportunity to actually go to a WWE show that they normally don't get in terms of, you know, it's actually being a show that they can actually go to instead of having to watch it on telly. So good on them. And we'll see how it goes. If anything pops up with the Australian government actually getting a show sometime in the near future, I will definitely 100% let you guys know all about that ASAP. And finally, the last bit of news that I have for this week comes from comicbook.com. An update on what Vince McMahon did at Raw this past Monday. This is from Connor Casey. Vince McMahon was backstage at this week's Monday Night Raw for the first time since initially leaving WWE last July. The news set the online wrestling community into a bit of a panic, as there's been a nagging fear that McMahon might try to force his way back into his old position of booking the product ever since he forced his way back onto WWE's board of directors in January. Regardless of the claims Mr. McMahon and other high-ranking WWE officials have made that he's merely back to oversee a sale of a company. Excuse me. And that was actually in parentheses, just letting y'all know. Reports then started going around that McMahon was just back to see John Cena, as a 16-time world champion was making his first appearance on Raw since last year. McMahon never appeared on the show itself, thank God, but a few updates have since popped up online about what he was up to. Dave Meltzer said on Wrestling Observer Radio, quote, "He was in gorilla position all night, so I mean, what does that tell you? He wasn't barking orders at people or anything like that, but he was in gorilla all night. And I was told that they tell you that he's only there to visit John Cena. That's the story, but there's more to it than that." He goes on to say, "He's doing more than letting on, but the person who was in control was Levesque last night. It's not like he was there and in charge and doing stuff, but it's not like he was just visiting John Cena and saying hi to a few people and then left. That didn't happen either. So the truth is a little bit in the middle, most likely," end quote. Russell Votes then on their Twitter this past Monday stated, quote, "While Vince McMahon was in gorilla the entire show and said to be in a pleasant mood, I'm told his presence backstage didn't impact anything script-wise last night," end quote. I smell fucking cap all over this. I'm going to tell you why. It's no secret Vincent Kennedy McMahon wants to get back into the creative joint. He wants his keys back to the Lamborghini. He wants to be the one to book these shows. It's no fucking secret. And if you don't think that's an actual thing, you ain't paying attention, my friends. Because of the simple fact that if there's one thing I know, and one thing we've known since Triple H had NXT many moons ago before he handed the reins over to Shawn Michaels, Vincent McMahon this is how I feel about it. And if you think differently, honestly, hit me up with a voice message. We can have that discussion. But I believe in my heart of hearts, Vincent McMahon was completely jealous of Triple H because of the fact that NXT on their big four weekends would have their show the day before WWE main roster pay-per-view, and NXT blew WWE main roster out of the fucking water almost every single time, with the exception of TakeOver San Antonio and the Royal Rumble following that event the day after. I don't think for one second that Vince McMahon has let that go, and I don't think for one second that Vince McMahon isn't trying to get back into the fold, because I do. I think he wants to get back into the fold. I know for a fact that he wants to get back into creative. That's a problem. You're going to sit in gorilla all night, the entire show. You're not just there to, you know, stop by, shake hands, throw some dap up, don't say the N-word to John Cena no more. Yes, that is a thing. You can find that video, and I'm just like, hi-ya. But in my heart of hearts, Vince McMahon wants back into creative. That's a problem for me. And it should be a problem for you too, hearing about this personally. Ever since Vince McMahon went away, so we can clear up some legal shit, which I believe he's still clearing up as we know, as of this recording personally. There is no way you can tell me that Vince McMahon doesn't want to get back into creative. You know damn well he does. Knowing that his son-in-law has the keys to the creative kingdom and is bringing back talent, doing solid storylines, actually backing the Judgment Day after, you know, seeing what they can do, building up to a Mysterio versus Mysterio match, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes at Mania, the six-woman tag, not too bad, but hey, I'll leave that for when we talk about WrestleMania in a few weeks' time. But you can, hearing this report, and honestly, think to yourself, Vince McMahon wasn't just sitting there all night drinking whatever the fuck he drinking, coffee, tea, and going to catering and seeing what the menu looked like for that evening. No, he was probably there to try and do some funky shit. I really do think I mean, you're not going to, I mean, it's one thing if you're just, you know, like I said, like the report said, you know, stopping by, seeing, actually visiting John Cena, saying what's up, you know, visiting, seeing, you know, wanting to be there for the actual segment for Theory and Cena. And as I said earlier in this segment, Theory got cooked. Theory got cooked so bad. But he wasn't just there just to see Cena, shake hands, dap up, talk to Cena a little bit, talk to Theory about how, you know, how well the segment went and all this stuff. And then just, you know, throw up the deuces and then go on about his merry fucking way. Ain't no fucking way. He wants in, he wants back in creative so bad. As Ace Ventura once said, you want that dookie so bad, you can taste it. He wants to be in creative, back in creative so damn bad. And we all know it. We all know it to be true. There's no reason. I mean, it's not a fucking secret that ever since Vince McMahon left, he's wanted back in. I mean, he forced himself back into the board of directors for it to be a, it's for a doing the sale of the company. Bullshit. Bullshit, my guy. Bullshit, fam. You want back in creative. And until news reports prove to me that he isn't getting back into creative, my opinion is very fucking simple. Vince McMahon wants to get back in creative. He's feeling all types of jealous because his son-in-law is running creative. And first thing with Brock Lesnar and Omos. When a report came out about him having influence about having that match. Now, granted, Brock Lesnar probably gave it the okay, and even for him, that's like way below his bar. But that's just me, though. But seriously, it's going to be very hard to convince me that Vince McMahon is not trying to get back into creative. Jealousy is a very, very terrible trait for guys like Vince McMahon. I mean, especially like I said earlier, with McMahon was getting his ass whooped when Triple H was running NXT back in the golden age. You mean to tell me that he doesn't want to get back into the fold? You mean to tell me that he doesn't want to just chill and gorilla, like come through, visit, hang out for a little bit and bounce? Nah, he wants back in creative. He wants to be at the microphone. He wants to be the one talking, being in the ear of Cole and Barrett and all those guys. There ain't no fucking way. Ain't no way. Ain't no fucking way. He wants back in. He wants back in creative so bad. What WWE's board of directors should have done, and I'm gonna leave it at this. Should tell them to fuck off and go home. Stay home, take care of your legal issues. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But when we come back on episode 354 of the YLP podcast, we're going to be discussing the AEW Revolution pay-per-view. Everything that went down, including that wonderful main event. My God, and what a main event that was. On the other side of episode 354 of the YLP podcast, stay tuned. We'll be right back. The weather's warming up again, y'all, but your wardrobe is way past its expiration date. A post-pandemic fashion faux pas indeed. Now, I may not know much about fashion, but what I do know is that everyone always wants to look their best when they step out into the world. That's why it's time you need to check out the revamped YLP store and stock up on some new threads. Like Mr. YLP himself, you know that looking good means you're feeling good. And trust me, you're going to be turning heads with the new Golden Lion Collection just in time for the warmer months ahead. Whether you're looking to dress up or dress down, Mr. YLP has got you covered. Whether it's starting the day with a cup of joe out of your Golden Lion mug, hanging out on the boardwalk in a cozy cotton poly blend hoodie, or simply enjoying a nap in the lion's den with a comfy pillow and fleece blanket, you know that you're doing it the YLP way. So get in your mobile device, laptop, or PC and head over to young-lions-perspective.creator-spring.com right now and get that wardrobe back to being stronger than a pride of lions. That's young-lions-perspective.creator-spring.com. Make sure you tell them Mr. YLP sent you. Anyway, before we get back into the AEW Revolution review, or get into the Revolution review, I should say, of course, y'all know I gotta plug my squadron, my people, my home squadron. That is, of course, the team that is Wrestle Addict Radio. Of course, I appreciate y'all checking me out every Saturday and getting your fill of YLP content. But make sure you check out the rest of the family. That is Wrestle Addict Radio. I believe the season finale of the Race for Impact podcast either happened this week or last week, but make sure you check that out. Race for Impact podcast hosted by the one and only Nate Leppin, right? And if you love yourself some old school TNA, NWA TNA, or Impact, you can definitely check that out every single Tuesday on Wednesdays. Of course, the people squad over at the Kings of the Rings podcast, King Ring Rose and Willie T. And of course, as always, shout out to the one and only the HBIC, that is K Murphy. I'll talk about all the news that went down over the past week, as well as pop culture news and all the fun stuff that you love to hear about on their show. It goes down every Wednesday night on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the Wrestle Addict Radio channel and the Kings of the Rings podcast YouTube page to check all of that out. Get your notifications up in there. And you can also check that out on Twitter and on Twitch as well at KOTR_podcast. Make sure you check that out, with Thursday being the audio version that drops every single week. Friday, kick off your weekend the only way that you know how, besides the YLP way, with the WrestleMania podcast. Of course, if you love yourself some Ruthless Aggression Era, I don't even know why I said it like that, the Ruthless Aggression Era of WWE, this is the podcast for you. Hosted by, of course, our boy, our neighbor to the north, Mr. Brother Fretz. We know him as Fretz over here on the side of things. And then you can round out the week with yours truly on the YLP podcast. Of course, y'all know what it is. It's Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast. I'm gonna make this into like 2 minutes, because we'll see how it goes. But AEW Revolution, let us get into it. AEW Revolution, the reason I call this week's episode Revolution Goes to Kumite was because there was just very a lot of good action that went down on this pay-per-view. I would say a lot of good stuff happened on this pay-per-view. I was very, very happy with how Revolution turned out this past Sunday. They did a damn good job of having exactly what they needed on the card, ending some rivalries, and possibly creating some new ones. As we went into Dynamite this past Wednesday, which I did not check out, unfortunately. But, excuse me. Of course, Princess is being a little security action, but we'll monitor that as we go. But there were a lot of things that went down this past Sunday that I really did appreciate across the board. This was a damn good show. And given the card that we had, I was very excited for it. I was quite surprised. As far as my record goes, let me see. We're 15-1 before this. Let's see, I got that. I believe I got that. That. I believe we went perfect. I may have to check the archives. I may have to check the board. But as far as I know, I believe, minus the pre-show match, because I really didn't know about that. I believe we went 8-0. I could be wrong. If you guys listened to the podcast last week, let me know. But as far as I see it right now, I believe we did go perfect. And if that's the case, 23-1 on the year so far, which is actually not bad. This is actually a better record than I thought going into WrestleMania weekend. I'm not going to lie. Damn you, Johnny Gargano. Damn you, Johnny Gargano. But I believe we are 23-1 on the year right now. Like I said, I could be wrong. And if y'all want to check that out, I'm kind of lazy at the moment. But 23-1 on the year, I ain't mad at that. Good record going into WrestleMania weekend. I'm getting pretty good at these prediction thingies. I'm not going to lie. But this show, this was a really solid show. And a lot of good things did happen on the show that I think people should be really happy about as we begin the road to Double or Nothing going down on Memorial Day weekend. A couple points I wanted to get out. The big points I wanted to make sure I had up on. The MJF Bryan Danielson match. I'm gonna, of course, y'all know me. I lead off with the big main event. One thing I did appreciate before I get into MJF Danielson is that I appreciated Excalibur throughout the night throwing out some solid stats throughout the matches. A couple of ones that I do remember off the top of my head, Chris Jericho hadn't lost 3 in a row going into the Ricky Starks match since 2006. To put that in perspective, I was literally a graduate. I was in my senior year of high school the last time Jericho lost 3 in a row. I'm showing my age a little bit. Good Lord. But yeah. So this is the first time, and I don't know what the stat is for 4 in a row, but I'm sure it has been quite a long time since Jericho's lost 4 in a row in his career. The other stat, though, going back into the Bryan Danielson MJF match, that this literally now is MJF's longest match of his career. He had never gone over 38 minutes in a matchup. And this was now officially the longest match of his career. And what a match it was. A wonderful match this was. This was crap. I don't know who produced this. I'm sure we'll figure out. We'll find out who produced this. Because that match was just fantastic. From beginning to end, all of this was just fantastic. I mean, I'm looking at the reception of it. This is from Wikipedia, by the way. Quote, Revolution received critical acclaim. Brian Rose of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter called the event one of the best shows of the year. Calm it down. We're only in March. He gave praise to the main event, which he called one of the best 60-minute Iron Man matches in modern history and a masterclass in storytelling. Rose also commended the tremendous Texas death match between Jon Moxley and Adam Page, which was a classic bloody war. Elsewhere on the card, the Elite versus the House of Black was very fun, and Chris Jericho versus Ricky Starks was a solid opener. Brian Alvarez, who was writing for Sports Illustrated, said the event exceeded expectations, defying an underwhelming build. He opined that the main event was surely the greatest Iron Man match in wrestling history. The Texas Death Match was preposterously bloody and violent, and the trios match was outstanding, while the rest of the show ranging from good to great. Now, I didn't really stick around for the build of this, but when you have writers saying greatest Iron Man match in wrestling history, one of the best 60-man Iron Man matches in wrestling history, a masterclass in storytelling, exceeded expectations, That's how you know you had a damn good show. And in the 4 years, and I said this in my preview in predictions last week, when it comes to Revolution, more often than not, you're going to have some damn good moments on this show. Not only did they have damn good moments, they had damn good matches on this card. I said last week, House of Black Elite was going to be a dark horse for candidate for match of the night, did I not? Just want to make sure y'all remember what was up. House of Black Elite was a fantastic thing. But getting back into MJF Bryan Danielson, if I may, this was I haven't seen many Iron Man matches in my life personally. But this probably, at least for me, was the best 60-minute Iron Man match I personally have ever seen. This was, from beginning to end, a full-on story that was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. It was absolutely brilliant. Ring psychology, storytelling, you know, chance to fight forever. About two or three times we probably heard that. This is awesome chance. This was just absolute. This was past a banger. This was an all-time classic. Okay. Wrestling Observer Newsletter gave, and I just actually saw this tweet before I actually got onto the mic today. Got into recording mode. This match actually received 5 3/4 stars from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. So basically, five stars is pretty much the best of all time. And now we've gone past five, and now we're just going towards six. But this is undoubtedly one of the greatest matches of all time. And I've been watching professional wrestling since I was 8. Hands down, one of the greatest matches I have personally ever seen in my lifetime. And I've been watching wrestling since I was 8 years old. This was just a journey. It was a flat-out journey from beginning to end. I mean, you know, of course, Danielson getting the Biscay knee 25 minutes into the matchup. MJ getting disqualified right after with a low blow, but using that to get two quick pinfalls to even things up at two apiece. Clever move right there from MJF. And like I said, whoever produced this matchup, gold stars. Give these motherfuckers a raise. All the flowers, everything. MJF versus Danielson. In terms of Revolution, is probably before I had in my head, Omega Page and versus the Young Bucks was probably the greatest. I'll put it this way: this match is so good. Princess is doing rollovers right now. On the floor. This is how excited she is. She's excited. Yes, I know. So exciting. So exciting. Yes. That's how good this match was. It was a damn good match. Then, of course, the Heat Seeker, 40 minutes into the matchup. Heat Seeker. We then, in the last 10 minutes, Danielson wonderfully submitting MJF in a regal stretch. And then it went 3-3. With MJF holding his middle finger on the rope and tapping to make Danielson think that he actually won. Beautiful ring psychology from MJF. Beautiful ring psychology from Danielson. I have a strange feeling that it's going to start springing up debate of actually who is the best wrestler in the world right now. And I know a lot of people will probably say Roman. I'm sure a lot of people will say Kenny. I know people will say Will Ospreay. But honestly, if we're going to have to say best wrestler in the world right now, you got to add MJF in this conversation, people. This man has heat. This man is a glorified heel. What he did at the press conference afterwards was just a stroke of fucking genius. It blows my mind how well done this match was curated. from beginning to end, there wasn't really a moment of just stop. Every second felt like it was important. And of course, in a 60-minute Ironman match, every second counts. But, excuse me. What made this match for me personally, was towards the end of the regulation period, Danielson hitting the diving headbutt, MJF bloodied up. We know he bladed. But he didn't blade too bad. I'm just going to put that out there. He didn't blade too bad. And I know people are highly against blading in the world of professional wrestling. I don't mind it as long as you don't go Eddie Guerrero on it. Yeah, I said it. And it has to be said. Because there's a difference between how MJF did it and how Eddie Guerrero did it when he bladed. We ain't gonna talk about that right now. And also Triple H kind of had a bad bleeding moment too. But we ain't gonna talk about that right now. We ain't worried about that. I digress. That moment, once that happened. Hi. Good girl. Good girl. The way that after that moment, that's when they turned up for me. And this was towards the end of the regulation period. They turned up hard. They turned up. Wait, pause. They turned up. 100% they turned up. Yeah. Yes, they did. They turned up. They turned up big time. No, you're not having my food. They turned up. 100% turned up. And it was just in that moment, I'm just like, okay, this is how we're going to ramp shit up. And then, of course, like I said, with Danielson having the single leg crab in, and then, of course, the Regal stretch in the last 10 seconds, last like minute or so, and MJF trying desperately to get to the ropes, gets to the ropes, taps the same time. That it's just that little bit of detail. It's those little bitty details that make or break a matchup. And MJF and Danielson, honestly, in my opinion, have wonderful chemistry together. Wonderful chemistry. As Roman said in the promo when he did a wonderful Dusty Rhodes impression, may I add, you have it. I ain't gonna try to do a Dusty impression. I ain't got time for that. You have it. You couldn't sell it. You couldn't buy it. You have it. This match had it all over the place. These two have chemistry. It's just, you just know. Real ones know. Real wrestling fans know. If you're casual, you just got your legitimate hardcore lesson in what actual good wrestling chemistry is. Yes. Yes, it was very good chemistry. I know. I think so, too. It was damn good chemistry between these two. I think this was just a wonderful main event. And I kind of figured I was going to do a two-part portion on it because it had to be discussed. This had to be discussed the right way. MJF, Brian Daniel. Now, of course, MJF retained his championship after, during the overtime period, fans were going buck wild. Tony Schiavone gets the word from Tony Khan, that there's going to be a sudden death overtime. He was happy as shit. He was just like, okay, yes, I'll go to the ring right now. Goes down to the ring, lets Justin Roberts and Bryce Remsburg know. And shout out one time for Bryce Remsburg. I used to give him hell back in the day when AEW first started because I thought he was on some bullshit. But you know what? Shout out to Bryce Remsburg for having that main event, for giving him that main event. He did it fantastically. And I'll tell you why. The best moment of the match on his end was when, during the overtime period, when MJF had the belt. And this was after, of course, this was, I think, before the oxygen tank to the face region on Danielson. Bryce Remsburg let him know. He's like, he turns around to checks on Danielson, then turns around, sees MJF with the belt, goes right over to him and says, hey, he's like, oh, you want to hit him with the belt? You hit him with the belt, you lose that championship. John and Danielson take the title. If you want to do it, he moves out of the way and says, be my guest. Oh, what a moment. which then led to Remsburg taking the belt from MJF. As his back was turned to MJF, he reaches into his trunks, grabs the Dynamite Diamond, goes for the punch. He misses, and then I believe, I think it was either the Regal Stretch or the LaBelle Lock that he caught MJF in. And as he was in the hold, Remsburg then takes the Dynamite Diamond off of his pinky and puts it in his pocket. That is good storytelling. You want to talk about storytelling? Remsburg did awesome in this matchup. I think Bryce Remsburg was the perfect candidate for this match. Now, you could have put Aubrey Edwards in there. You really could have. You could have put, I would say, honestly, the two best referees that AEW has right now, Aubrey Edwards and Bryce Remsburg. I don't know who I forget the other guy's name. I think it's Rick Knox. He's actually pretty good, too. Stephen Knoll, I think, is the other one. I mean, they have really good referees in AEW, if we're being brutally honest. But Bryce Remsburg was the perfect referee for this match, and especially for that moment. Holy shit. I was just so thoroughly enthralled. And that is the word I don't use from the English language that often. But when I do, it's warranted. I was enthralled by this. I was really encapsulated with it. I'm putting my IQ out there right now. I was encapsulated. I was just mesmerized. It was one of those things where it's one of those matches where you just have to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the spectacle that was this match. Because that's what it was. It was a spectacle. This was, and I'm sure a lot of people wanted Danielson to win this championship. And honestly, at points, I thought that Danielson was going to take it. And that's the best thing about this matchup too. The believability. Excuse me. From all sides. I mean, even commentary from beginning to end, with Shivani, Excalibur, and Taz, solid. And one point I remember Taz talking about, you know, all the water he was drinking during MJF was drinking during the matchup. You know, it's like, you know, bringing up the fact that, you know, he should know this. He's an athlete that you don't, if you're just rinsing your mouth out, because you can't actually do that. And I'm going to do it right now, actually. Well, I'm not going to fully do it. I'm going to enjoy some water, but. But if you're a boxing fan like myself, or if you've ever watched a boxing match in general, you'll see fighters in their corners. Their trainers are giving them water. They're just, you know, swishing it around their mouth and they're spitting it out. And my buddy Brian, shout out to my homie Brian O. And he actually told me this, that when we drink water, you know, we're satiating our mouth. But he actually told me, like, well, you know how, like, you know, boxers, you know, swish the water in their mouth and they spit it out. You're basically able to essentially coat your mouth with water. And whatever is on your tongue is still able to take in that water. You don't necessarily, and that's why they just spit it out, because they're actually able to still take water in regardless of how much they actually spit out. So I really appreciated that from Taz bringing that up. And he brought that up at least three or four times throughout the match doing that. And he stated, you know, in a match like this, you know, he's going to blow himself up if he pounds that water, which made me drink more water too. But it was little things like that throughout the matchup that really made this match the way it was. I mean, from the producing, from Tony Khan making the call to go to overtime, to the commentary, to the match, to the two men in the ring, to Bryce Remsburg, this match was essential. I honestly think, and I'm gonna say this flat out loud, this may be AEW's greatest match of all time. Easily the greatest match in Revolution history in the 4 years that we had it, which has. This easily surpassed Omega and Paige versus the Bucks. Easily. If you're talking about Revolution, this is the greatest match. This is the greatest Revolution match ever in the 4 years that they've had it. In terms of AEW's matches, this may be their greatest match of all time. This is the standard to which every match has to follow up with. They didn't get 5 3/4 stars just because it was Sunday. Okay? They got 5 3/4 stars because they fucking earned it. This match was fan-fucking-tastic. From beginning to its end, with MJF putting Danielson in the LaBelle lock. Now, if it was cattle mutilation, I would even be more impressed. But to put Danielson in the LaBelle lock, Danielson trying to fight out of it, and unfortunately, and MJF keeping the hold in and having and making Danielson tap to his signature finishing move when it comes to submissions, brilliant. 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 I mean, I didn't see the promo from Danielson, but he did say in his promo, it's time to go home, which probably means he'll be going away for a little while, which honestly, I ain't mad at. You put on a match like that, yeah, you take all the time you want. Spend time with your boo thing, just like a boo bang, stand by your side like your boo thing and your babies. And you, and when we know we have a program ready for you, you know we got you, fam. Danielson earned his vacation. MJF deserves all the flowers. Both of them deserve all the flowers. Give Remsburg all the flowers. Commentary team all the flowers. Well, I mean, yeah, give the commentary team all the flowers. Give Tony Khan all the flowers. Give that all, whoever was involved with, had a hand in this match, give them all the flowers. The flowers, the daps, the praise, the beauty. This was, it's rare for me to say a match is an all-time classic, because it's rare for me to actually see a match and just like, this is probably one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. It's rare. It's rare for me to see that. The probably the most, I would say, if we're talking about me personally, the greatest match I may have seen up until the, it's honestly hard to put like number, what's number one on my list, because there's so many fucking, I have to go through an entire archive. But the last time I may have been anywhere close to saying a match is an all-time classic was Omega versus Okada. Ooh, let me remember. Hold on. Bring it back. Two. Dominion. 2 out of 3 falls. That was probably the last time I could say a match was a legitimate all-time classic to me. And I'm sure some of y'all will probably be like, oh, what about this match? What about them? I'm sure there have been other ones that you would consider all-time classics. But to me, the 2 out of 3 falls match between Omega and Okada was probably the last time I could honestly say we saw an all-time classic. And I think that was one of the first few matches that actually got bigger. I think that was the actual first or one of the first few matches that got better than a 5-star. I think that was the first 6-star, if I remember correctly, in the history of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, which basically states the greatest match that Dave Meltzer ever seen. And that match was brilliant from beginning to end. Everything about that match was just brilliant. With, of course, Omega becoming the IWGP heavyweight champion after beating Okada, after losing to him at Wrestle Kingdom in their first encounter before facing each other at Dominion and then facing each other once again during the G1 climax. This match let me put it this way. MJF versus Bryan Danielson is the one when you're a grandpa, grandma, whatever. This is going to be the match you tell your grandkids about. And I'm being dead serious. MJF versus Bryan Danielson is the match you talk to your grandkids about. If you want to get your grandkids into professional wrestling, you pull out that. You bring this match out and you show them this match. In terms of storytelling, ring psychology, the lead up to it, the of course the match itself, every bit and piece in this matchup was to quote Future, sensational. There are no bad words. I have no bad words to say about this match because this match was that damn good. And that's why I did an entire segment on this match alone. To kind of get it out of the way so I can talk about the rest of the card, but to pretty much give them my flowers. They deserve every last bit of it. This was pure brilliance from beginning to end. It has replay value, all the things. Just, you know, if we're just going off this match alone, that was A+. Probably one of the, this could be in my top 5. This will probably be in my top 5 for greatest matches I have ever seen in my life. this has such replay value. And I think if you're going to get into professional wrestling, these are one of the matches you should watch. Just going to throw that out there. When we come back, though, I'm going to talk about the rest of the card. Actually, I'm going to go right into the next segment. We're going to talk about the rest of the card, give my final grade, worst and best matches, and of course, the MVP for Revolution. I'll be right back. Well, guys, that's going to be it for episode 354 of the YLP podcast. As always, one of the best fucking time out of your day, your night, your evening, wherever you may be, wherever you are in the world. Thank you guys so much for checking out this episode of the podcast. And as always, I greatly and truly appreciate it. Once again, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or opinions about today's episode or any of the other 353 episodes of the YLP podcast, do not hesitate to hit your boy up for a voice message over at anchor.fm/YoungLionsPerspective or at podcasters.spotify.com/YoungLionsPerspective. Whichever route you go, I believe both will make sense. You can also hit me up with an email. Send me one over at younglionsperspective@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on my social media, of course, you can find me over on Twitter at YLPerspective. You can find me over on Instagram at young_lions_perspective. And you can find me on Facebook. Simply search for Young Lions Perspective Podcast. Yes, I still have a Facebook. It be like that sometimes. But of course, you can find this podcast across all different platforms. Of course, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, all that good stuff. Wherever you find, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can for sure find the YLP podcast on those different platforms. You dig? So, what is going on for next week? Well, as far as I know, there are no pay-per-views to talk about. There are no things to review. So, it'll just be a full-on, flat-out show with just the news of the week. And maybe, just maybe, I might do a little something special in what I would consider what would be a proper WrestleMania card from yours truly. I've been kind of working it out in my head. What would I have as the proper WrestleMania 39 card? And looking at the card that we have for WrestleMania 39 that's shaping up, personally, it's not actually a bad card. It's actually shaping up to be a good card. But I want to kind of give you, I would want to give you my idea of what a YLP WrestleMania card would look like. So I'm gonna try to maybe conjure up a couple things. You know, if I do get around to it, I'll do one for you guys next week. If not, it is just going to be straight out, flat out, all the news that's fit for me to talk about. If you have any news that comes up during the week, hit me up with an email and send me that news. And if you do, I'll shout you out on next week's episode. Because that's how I get down. That's it for me, though, this week. I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Enjoy your week. And I'll see you guys right back here next Saturday for episode 355 of the YLP Podcast. I'll see you. Right, now we can get into the remainder of the AEW Revolution review, and I figured I'd do this as a two-parter because I believe MJF and Brian Danielson deserve their own segment, so we can give them the proper love it deserved, because it was a well-deserved matchup, and this should be definitely on your match of the year list when we get to December. And it definitely, I guarantee, and this is probably the earliest I've ever had a match be locked for the top 10 list. But yes, MJF, Brian Danielson is the first lock for top 10 matches of the year. Where that will land on the list? Well, we got 9 more months to figure that out. Well, technically 8.5, because I usually have to cut off before Christmas. But yeah, that's a lock for match of the year candidate 100%. But as we get into the rest of the card, I won't talk about the entire card because some of the matches were just aight. Wardlow versus Samoa Joe was okay. Congrats to Wardlow for becoming the new TNT champion, then losing it 3 days later to Powerhouse Hobbs. So congratulations to Powerhouse Hobbs for becoming the TNT champion. Shout out to Powerhouse Hobbs. Guns retaining the TNT Tag Team Championship, the AEW World Tag Team Championship. But I'm glad FTR came back because we're probably going to get something of that nature between them and the Guns at Double or Nothing. But we got to talk about that the Texas Death Match between Hangman Adam Page and Jon Moxley. This is probably one of the couple of matches that I watched during this card that is the sole reason why I named this episode Revolution Goes to the Kumite. These two literally were trying everything they could to kill each other. Okay? Wardlow was yelling die to Samoa Joe, but you could have just let Hangman and Mr. Moxley do the same thing. And they were willing to kill each other to ensure they got the victory at Revolution. My God. They had barbed wire everything. It might as well have been Full Metal Mayhem. Might as well have been. You had regular barbed wire. You had barbed wire tables. You had barbed wire steel chairs. I'm surprised they didn't have a Lucille bat out because they needed that too. Just, oh my God. They were literally doing everything they could to literally destroy each other. They brought the chain out. They just, for almost 25 minutes, they literally beat the living hell out of each other, y'all. And for me personally, I've gotten older, I'm not the biggest fan of death matches personally. Not especially like the indie versions of death matches. I mean, I have watched CZW's King of the Death Match tournament a couple times, and damn. And I'm just gonna put that out there. Not cool to pour alcohol on someone's cuts during the match. Just gonna throw that out there. But at least it does help heal the cuts in some way. But these two, from not even the opening bell, from the second Moxley opened up the barricade to walk out to the ring, it was go time. They beat the hell out of each other. They use bricks, bruv. They use bricks. We had Adam Page damn near had his hand broken off of bricks. Like, everything you could possibly think of for a death match, for a Texas death match, they basically did. These two went at it. And I'm very happy that Page did win this matchup. Moxley, the way his standing in AEW, he could afford to lose a matchup of this magnitude. I think Page really deserved to win this matchup, which is why I believe, if I remember correctly, I picked Adam Page to win this matchup because this was just pure unadulterated violence. This was right up Blackpool Combat Club's alley, 100%. It was one of those things where it was right up Moxley's alley. This is something Moxley definitely was probably like all for when they were going to do this matchup. This was brilliant at its finest. It was just pure. It was just everything you wanted in two men who literally hate each other's guts to do. Power bombs through tables, beating each other up with the steel chairs. This was violence personified. One thing I did see on Twitter this past week, before I watched Revolution the other day, was basically, I believe, a tweet from Chris Sabin talking about the origins of how we got the nickname Hangman in the first place. It was because he did the same thing he did to Jon Moxley to win the match on Sunday. He did the Chris Sabin in front of his family at a show. I believe it was a Ring of Honor show. And he did the same thing he did to Moxley, did the Sabin, and that's how we got the nickname Hangman. So I thought that was a pretty nice little tweet there, explaining how he got the nickname. And shout out to Chris Sabin for that. Chris Sabin's one of my favorite wrestlers from the older TNA when he was part of the X Division. Yeah. Love me some Chris Sabin. Of course, MCMG with Alex Shelley. But this match was just violent. Violent. Brilliant violence. But violence nonetheless. this was just fun to watch. I mean, it's one of those matches where you had to look away a couple times, but you couldn't look away. You know what I'm saying? It's like a 13-car pileup that you just couldn't look away from. You feel me? That it was one of those matches. It was just flat out just, I'm going to try to kill you. You're going to try to kill me. Let's see who dies first type shit. Let's keep it real with each other. That was a fun match. And my God, the amount of creativity they allowed for this matchup to happen, especially with the bricks, was great. The chain was great. It was just, oh my God. Everything about that was just crazy. From beginning to end, Paige beating Moxley by submission because he knew he was about to pass out from the chain wrapped around his fucking neck and destroying his trachea. My Lord. That visual at the end was just crazy. But shout out to Paige and Moxley for that, man. That was just buck wild. Buck wild. Woo! Just thinking about all the spots in the matchup. Just insane, dude. In fucking insane. One piece of note from the AEW Women's World Championship match between Hayter, Saraya, and Ruby Soho. Shout out to Hayter for retaining the championship. Actually, two pieces. One, I'm surprised they have Britt Baker as a babyface at the moment. I'm not mad at it. I'm just very surprised. I'm like, I would never consider Britt Baker DMD as an actual babyface. I'm not saying it wasn't a thing, but it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, like when Roman Reigns turned heel 3 years ago, almost 3 years ago, actually. It's something I'm surprised by. And it works. This actually works. Especially now, especially with the case of what happened after Hayter retained her championship. Storm, I believe, went after Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Saraya goes after her. Ruby chases Saraya and Storm out of the ring. And then it made it seem like, you know, Hayter and Baker, you know, Soho was siding with Hayter and Baker. Then she hits the detonation kick on, I believe it was Baker first. And then Hayter got the beats by Dre afterwards. But the way they played it out was brilliant. And I believe Shravani had said it on commentary, is that Soho, in a sense, was technically an outsider when she came into the fold in AEW. The way they portrayed it is that she was never really accepted as an original, because she wasn't. Hayter and Baker were originals in AEW, and Ruby Soho always felt like an outsider to, even her jacket said it, homegrown outsider, on the jacket when she was coming out to the ring. And now she's aligned herself with Saraya and Toni Storm. I think these three are a solid stable. I think these three can definitely do some damage. Toni Storm is a heel. It's surprisingly great. I love the fact that Storm is a heel. I love the way they portray Storm as a heel. And of course, putting spray paint on the back of that booty. You know, booty. But I am just a man. I am merely just a man. But Soho linking up with Saraya and Storm, I think was a solid idea. Very good swerve on that. And it was just fantastic. Good match between these three. Personally, Hayter retained. Just a lot of good bits and pieces from this matchup that I did like, especially with the Soho turn on Baker and Hayter. Very good shit. The real reason I called this episode Revolution Goes to the Kumite was the House of Black versus the Elite for the World Trios Championship. These are six men that really, truly, mind you, we all knew this was a very anticipated matchup. This match was highly anticipated on the card. If you had just given me a card with Starks, Jericho, Jungle Boy and Cage, House of Black and Elite, Paige, Moxley, MJF, Danielson, this would have been card of the year 100%. That's not to say the other couple of matches on the card weren't bad, but these matches carried this night. And House of Black versus the Elite was this easily... Before we got to the main event, this could have been match of the night. But I did say on last week's episode that this match was going to be a dark horse candidate for match of the night. And boy, did they make me look good. They showed up and showed out and gave us one of the best matches of the night. 18 minutes worth of just pure unadulterated ass whooping across the board. Everybody got their shit in. I'm surprised Cutler and Nakazawa didn't get involved as much as I thought they would. Hart got a V-trigger. That was buck wild. This goes to show that the Trios Championship, when you do have a solid division, like the one, like if the Trios division continues to actually get some legs, you have the Elite, you have the House of Black, you have Dark Order with Hangman if you want to go that route. Blackpool Combat Club is still in the fold. You have a lot of decent Trios teams that can fill that division. And I think it gives opportunities for people like Black, King, and Matthews, who are now the new World Trios Championships. And shout-outs, huge kudos to them, but also kudos to the Elite. But this was your gold standard. This was like the – this was basically like the Eagles-Chiefs. You literally had the two best teams in the NFL playing each other for the Super Bowl. You had the two best trios teams. Wow, alliteration is hard sometimes. Two best trios teams in the division, in AEW, going head-to-head for the right to see who was the best trios team in AEW right now. These two just gave everything. They literally showed up and showed the hell out on Sunday, dude. This was just fan-fucking-tastic. I was so thoroughly happy with the result of this matchup. Everything just, you know, Black Omega facing off against each other. Crowd was going buck wild. Super kicks galore, of course. The spot with Black King and Matthews doing topes over the top rope, that was insane. That was just fantastic. I just love every bit of this. Like I said, the Trios division is still up and coming, but man, did they really just give you like the reason why the Trios championships were invented in the first place. I mean, you have Death Triangle too, and they're a solid tag team. Of course, they had that Best of Seven series with the Elite, and I'm kind of upset that the Death Triangle didn't get that win that 4-3, but it'd be like that sometimes. But all roads were going to lead to the Elite versus House of Black for those Trios championships. And they just put on a show. They put on a damn good show. And for the House of Black to now be the World Trios Champions, it makes sense. Hopefully AEW does extend the contracts of Omega and the Young Bucks because, well, A, they're the EVPs of the company. But B, they are a very integral part of what AEW is. They have been there since the beginning. Feel me? So it would be foolish of AEW to lose the Elite. It really would. They know that. Tony Khan knows that. Tony Khan ain't stupid. Get those deals signed. Get that pop in and keep them in for at least a few more years. But man, they brought us. This was the beginning of bringing us to the Kumite. It was after the final burial match. Well, actually, burial match. I would honestly say the burial match was actually kind of part of the reason why they went to the Kumite. But this six-man tag, this World Trio Championship match, is the reason, the beginnings of them going to the Kumite. It was just knee strikes, V-triggers, super kicks, rolling elbows, rolling lariats. Just, they beat the hell out of each other. They would just give it, every person who was involved in this match got the beats by Dre. Even Julia Hart caught a V-trigger. I mean, like I said before. And shout out to Julia Hart for taking that V-trigger, man. I know it's one of those things where it's just like, oh, you're going to, okay. So we're going to do this. Malakai's going to move out of the way. You're going to take a V-trigger. I think a couple points in this matchup, I had even said to myself, I've said this plenty of times, you couldn't pay me to take this bump. And the one that comes to mind is when Brody King, I believe, had Matt Jackson on the chair on the barricade, runs full flat and does a flying crossbody on the man's. You couldn't pay me to get that spot. You gotta cut the check if you're gonna have me take that bump. But these six men really put on a really good matchup for the fans in San Francisco. And shout out to the fans in San Francisco one time for just really being amped up all night. They were just amped, especially for this matchup. They were amped the fuck up for this matchup. And again, shout out to the House of Black for becoming the New World Trios champions. I believe they had a I'm not sure if it was this past Wednesday or this coming Wednesday. It will be a triple threat trios championship tag team match. I believe it's the Elite, House of Black, and I believe the Jeff Jarrett's team is going to get Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and Sanjay Dutt, or something like that, of something of that nature. I could be wrong, but they will be defending those championships early, and good for them to be doing so. You know, let's get the defenses going. Let's get them back in there, because I'm not going to lie. Ever since Malakai Black got released from WWE, man, it was only a matter of time before he went somewhere else. He's been doing him. He did himself a well done service to not only go to AEW, but WWE was dumb enough to not switch his clause. For those of you who may not know, WWE gives is a 90-day no compete clause if you are ever released from the company or if you ever leave the company. It's a 90-day no compete clause. That's basically saying basically you have 3 months. Kind of sort yourself out, and you can't really compete anywhere else for 90 days. WWE was stupid enough to not do that, and he was still on his NXT contract at the time, per se. Now if you're part of NXT, you only have a 30-day no compete clause. So basically, once we found out that news, and I believe I actually discussed this way back when Malakai Black got released, he only had a 30-day no-compete clause. So all he had to do was just wait a month, and then he was just in AEW. Sometimes WWE does really dumb shit. It be like that sometimes. But, this matchup, this is, again, has such replay value. I would watch this again and again and again. And, just fantastic. Jack Perry, Christian Cage, real quick. I'm happy that Perry did win this matchup. Now, if I remember correctly, this was supposed to be a no DQ match, more so a street fight. But the fact that, of course, Jungle Boy had the promo where he had Christian Cage Tombstone, had him with a shovel with some dirt around that joint. Now I'm just like, okay, we're going to do this. I am very happy that Perry and Cage ended the feud the way they did, but with Perry winning the feud. Perry had to win this feud. It would have done Cage no favors if Cage won this matchup. It was always Jack Perry that needed to win this. Fix my pop filter real quick. But yeah, Jack Perry always had to win this feud. Had to win this matchup. This was after everything Christian Cage did, talking about his dead daddy, talking about his mama, talking about his family, doing all this goofy shit, taking Luchasaurus away from Mans, turning him heel. Which honestly, heel Luchasaurus is pretty fucking, looks pretty damn good if I say so myself. Cage did all this shit. And if it ended with Cage winning, it would have just been a very terrible way to blow off the feud. Perry always had to win this matchup. Jungle Boy always had to win this. And the best part, I would say the best part about this matchup was when he set up Christian Cage for the concerto, and did a little callback to when Jungle Boy tried to do it the first time, but he didn't have the heart to do it. He didn't necessarily have the stones to do it, but he just didn't have it in his heart. He didn't have that killer instinct to be like, you know what? I'm gonna end this dude. Oh, but he sure did in the final burial match. And fantastic. And the way that he closed the casket and then the casket just drops right after that. That was a pretty nice little detail there at the end. But yeah, Jungle Boy Jack Perry deserved to win this matchup. I'm happy he won this. I'm happy he had this feud is now behind him. And hopefully somewhere down the line, we can start getting him for some singles belts. TNT Championship, looking at you. And also one bit of news before I get into the rest of this stuff. So the AEW brass are going to be changing the name of the All Atlantic Championship to the AEW International Championship. Just so you guys get ahead. So just a heads up for y'all with this, just so y'all know. But last little bit, Ricky Starks and Chris Jericho, big win for Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks needed this. Ricky Starks needed this. Chris Jericho did not need this win at all. And I'm happy that Jericho was just like, you know what? Yeah, Starks, he knows. Sometimes when you know type of stuff. Ricky Starks needed this definite victory. And I'm very thankful that that Ricky Starks got this one. Because Ricky Starks is a star. Ricky Starks is a star. You don't spell Starks without star, correct? Ricky needed this win more than anybody else in this matchup. Anybody else being Chris Jericho. But this is a good matchup. It was a very, very solid opener just to kick off this matchup. Like I said, Ricky Starks is going to be a very big talent that AEW needs to keep around for their future. Starks ain't no joke. And he proved that by beating Chris Jericho on Sunday night. I loved it. I loved it. I actually love this matchup. Like I said, it was a really, really good opener between these two. It was just, this is the kind of opener you wanted to see. I mean, if you started with Wardlow Samoa Joe, I would have been happy with it. If you started with Chris Jericho and Starks, I would have loved it. If you started with the Women's World Championship to kick off the night, I would have been okay with that too. But Starks versus Jericho was the right call for the opener, which kind of makes me think Hayter, Saraya, and Ruby Soho actually got the dead spot in the and then Wardlow and Samoa Joe got the dead spot. Yikers. But we ain't gonna talk about that right now. But Starks beating Jericho was the right call. Starks is a star in AEW. And I think after beating Jericho, I think Starks is definitely going to be seeing a bigger feud, which kind of makes me think possibly, since we now have Powerhouse Hobbs as the TNT champion, maybe, just maybe, they do Starks versus Hobbs for the TNT championship at Double or Nothing. Just going to throw it out there. You know, let me know what y'all think about that. But with that, we now get into the wonderful particular portion of the program. And let us begin with the best and worst matches of the night. Let's start with the worst match, because that's what we usually do around here. Worst match of the night. Honestly, on a card where, now mind you, this is a card where pretty much every match was pretty damn good. Was good. But if I had to choose which match, like, you're pretty much choosing the worst of the best, in a sense. The worst of the best. And if I had to choose which one was the worst match of the night, honestly, I'm going to go with Wardlow Samoa Joe. Shocker. I know. I love both of these guys, but for me, this match didn't really do much for me. I mean, if you wanted it, I mean, I could go with a tie for the triple threat for the Women's World Championship, because that didn't really do much for me either. You know what? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a tie. I'm going to do the Women's World Championship, Triple Threat, and Wardlow Samoa Joe as my worst matches of the night. It was the worst of the best, if we're honestly good about it. They were good matches, but for me, out of what we saw in the rest of the card, those two for me were basically on that same plane. You know, if I get to the point where I'm on my phone for a little bit and not as much focusing on the matchup itself, it's going to be on that worst match of the card list. But yeah, like I said, this is just the worst of the best. And these two, they had to be chosen. It's unfortunate, but a match or two had to be chosen. And so I'm going to go with a tie for Wardlow Samoa Joe and the Women's Triple Threat match for the Women's World Championship as worst match of the night. In terms of match of the night, if it weren't for MJF Danielson, the Elite versus House of Black would have been easily match of the night. Hands down. And that's why I said, if it weren't for MJF versus Brian Danielson. Because MJF versus Brian Danielson is your match of the night when it comes to Revolution. This match was sensational. It was brilliant. Beginning to end, an all-time classic, all the flowers, everything. And I ain't gotta explain it no more. You can just listen to the last segment. But yeah, that was definitely your match of the night, and it's gonna be a lock for match of the year candidate for sure when all is said and done. Hands down, will definitely be in my top 10 for 2023 easily, without question. Which then goes, we then go to the MVP of AEW Revolution. I couldn't tell you past winners. I wish I could, honestly. And if I only remember, only one I remember is the is Omega and Page, Omega Page and the Bucks for their tag team championship match at Revolution. I remember that was a definite. I remember that being the MVP for Revolution. If I remember that in 2020, but it is going to be co-MVPs this go around, and it is 100% MJF and Brian Danielson as your co-MVPs of the night. These two put on a show. 100% put on a show. They deserve all the accolades in this. And it's no surprise that they get match of the night and co-MVPs. Like I said, this is probably AEW's greatest match ever. And these two put on an absolute clinic, a masterclass, if you will. Again, I will just say it, ring psychology, ring generalship, storytelling, you know, everything you needed in a 60-minute Iron Man match, for me personally, we were given that. We were easily given that. And those two definitely deserve the MVPs for Revolution 2023, hands down. And I guarantee they'll both be in the running for my MVP of 2023 before the year is said and done, hands down. They are definitely in the watch list of MVPs. And absolutely, 100% deserve to be co-MVPs of the night. Which leads to the final grade. And as of late, I wouldn't say lenient in my grades. I haven't been generous in my grades. I think I've been very objective in how I've been grading Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and now we get into Revolution. This will probably be the highest grade I've given so far when it comes to my reviews. Minus Wrestle Kingdom, because I haven't fully watched Wrestle Kingdom as of yet. But without question, this is 100% A. This is an A show. Again, it's rare of me to give A pluses, because then I would say this is the flat out show of the year. It is an A. It is an absolute A from me. And this is probably the highest grade I have given for a particular show in quite some time. This was an A show, 100%. And of course, matches like Danielson, MJF, Elite House of Black, Moxley and Page, they really carried this show. 100%. Starks Jericho was great. The final burial match was good. Everything was good. A across the board. But ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude episode 354 of the YLP podcast. When we come back, we'll close out the show in proper YLP fashion and get you ready for next week's episode 354 of the YLP podcast. Be right back.
This has been a WrestleAttic Radio branded podcast.